ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 नायं
नायं
सुखापो
सुखापो consider the body the same as the self. Report. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the son of Mother Yashoda, is very easily attainable to devotees, but not to tapasvis, yogis, jnanis, and others who have a bodily concept of life. Although they may sometimes be called santabhaktas, real bhakti begins with dasya ras. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, Ye yatamam prabhadyante tamstatai bhavi vajamyaham mama vartmanu vartante manushyat partasarvasa. As living entities surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pita. Everyone is seeking Krishna, for he is the super soul of all living souls, of all individual souls. Everyone loves his body and wants to protect it because he is within the body as the soul. And everyone loves the soul because the soul is part and parcel of the super soul. Therefore, everyone is actually seeking to achieve happiness by reviving his relationship with the super soul. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Vedaischa Sarvedaham Eva. By all the Vedas, it is I who am to be known. Therefore, the Karmis, Jnanis, and Yogis, and saintly persons are all seeking Krishna. But by following in the footsteps of devotees or in a direct relationship with Krishna, especially the inhabitants of Vrindavan, one can reach the supreme position of associating with Krishna. As it is stated, Vrindavanam parityaja param ekam nagacchati. Krishna does not leave Vrindavan even for a moment. The Vrindavan Vasis, Mother Yashoda, Krishna's friends and Krishna's conjugal lovers, the younger gopis with whom he dances, have very intimate relationships with Krishna. And if one follows in the footsteps of these devotees, Krishna is available. Although the nitya siddha expansions of Krishna always remain with Krishna, if those engaged in sadhana siddhi follow in the footsteps of Krishna's nitya siddha associates, such sadhana siddhas also can easily attain Krishna without difficulty. But there are those who are attached to bodily concepts of life. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, for example, have very prestigious positions, and thus they have the sense of being very exalted Ishwaras. In other words, because Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are guna avatars and have exalted positions, they have some small sense of being like Krishna. But the pure devotees who inhabit Vrindavan do not possess any bodily conception. They are fully dedicated to the service of the Lord in sublime affection, prema. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore recommended prema bhumarto mahan. The highest perfection of life is prema, pure love in relationship with Krishna. And Mother Yashoda appears to be the topmost of devotees who have attained this perfection. So this is the end of this chapter and of this Leela, where it's explaining about the glories of Mother Yashoda and her affection for Krishna, her love for Krishna. So these are very conclusive statements that are being given here, that the position of Mother Yashoda is very special, very unique. So this is not just, you know, just in general glorification. General glorification also is special. It means that there is something special about the person. But this point has been made a few times and in comparison with others. So it's not just saying after she tied up Krishna that she's so special, she's so wonderful. Who can tie up Krishna? He's the Supreme Lord and she's done it. But saying that even Brahma, even Shiva, even Lakshmiji herself cannot get some mercy. No one is getting such mercy. So this position is very, very special that is being given to her. So this then is something that must be taken very seriously, very deeply. These points of this verse must be contemplated because these are very essential in our devotional life if we want to advance to such a position. If we want to also take part and share in this particular level of mercy. So, points that are being given is, one is that the consideration is nothing to do, our consideration of Krishna has nothing to do with the body. The jnanis, the yogis, the other persons, tapasvis, all these persons, their considerations of spiritual life are actually very much connected with the body. Even though it will be considered that they're transcendentalists, but actually it's very bodily situated, because the impersonalist, his inspiration of getting out of the material world is the trouble that the gross and subtle body give him. So actually his purpose is not to get so much out of the material world. To get to the Brahman is not the specialty. It's to get out of material misery. That's actually the goal. You understand? There's a difference there. It's just like, let's say, you want to eat. And then there's a preparation you're eating. So there's a difference between you want to eat, and then whatever you happen to eat, whatever it happens to be, that's what you've eaten. Or you want to eat that specific preparation, and you use the process of eating to do it. It gives two completely different flavors. So the impersonalist and the yogi, they just want to get out of the material world. It just happens to be that they end up in Vermont. Right? And so to give them the inspiration to perform the duties to get out, then they have to focus on that, right? Without a goal, you don't get. But their actual motivation is the bodily concept of life. Therefore, even though they appear as transcendentalists, they come back to the material world because they're not actually transcendentalists. They're actually just bodily conscious people. Yogis are the same. The Buddhists are the same. Anybody you see is the same. Nice, be good, be this. Be good to what? Be good to the guy's body. Be good to the guy's mind. Be good to the guy. But it's not actually based on the soul. The soul is a different category. So Mother Yashoda and the residents of Vrindavan, that's not their purpose. Their interest is only to please Krishna. And to please Krishna, you may use whatever's about. Mother Yashoda, she churns milk for Krishna. That's about. She cooks the milk for Krishna. She does different things. She makes ornaments for Krishna. She feeds Krishna. She does all these things. So her only purpose is to please Krishna, serve Krishna. Then the body may be used. So this is the platform of spontaneous devotional service. That it's the that desire to please Krishna that is the premise, the basis. Then, in that, you use whatever is available. So the same principle can be used in the material world, is that we want to please Krishna and what's available. We have our particular material body, our particular material situation, our particular subtle body, we use that. But we're not trying to use our this, we're trying to please Krishna. Right? The lower stages, we want to engage the body in the Lord's service. We want to engage the mind in the Lord's service. So therefore, because it's bodily centered, then we go through so many austerities, we go through this, we go through that. And then in this way, we feel good. We did a nice fast, we made it through the fast, we did nirjal, you know, we survived, we didn't die over the night somehow, or, you know, we woke up in the morning still alive. So we consider that it was a really nice experience. But what we're thinking of is that austerity that the body experienced. So because we identify with the body, then naturally we take that identity and engage it in the Lord's service. So that's where one starts from. But we see Mother Yashoda is very special because she's gone beyond that. She's not working on that platform. She just wants to serve Krishna. And from that, that service has manifested her body. Right? Our body didn't manifest because of our desire to serve Krishna. This body manifested because we had the desire for some kind of material attainment. And because of the specific attainment, then Krishna mentions that therefore then the particular eye, nose, ear, tongue, skin that will be able to experience a particular situation in which that ego, the particular intelligence needed to affect that identity, then it's manifest. So now that that's manifested by this spontaneous attraction and attachment to material energy, then now we're reversing it by engaging in the Lord's service. So we see that, okay, this is what I have, I'm using this to serve the Lord. So in the beginning, we're starting from what we are by our material identity. But eventually, then, it goes beyond that to spiritual identity. First is generic, is I am, you know, this soul, I am servant of Krishna. That everybody can satisfactorily, confidently say. One may not be able to say who one is in the spiritual world, but one knows one is a devotee and one's position is to serve. So that much we can be confident of. So taking that as the principle, then we start reversing it. So in the beginning, it may be more connected with what I want to do and this and that. Then later on, it becomes connected with what I can do. Right? There's a difference there. It's just like one can manage. Okay, so I want to manage for Krishna because I identify I'm a manager. Right? So, but after a while, it's, I want to serve Krishna. What can I do for Krishna? Well, I can manage, so, okay, I'll engage that in Krishna's service. Does that make a difference? You see the difference? It's a subtle, but this is the point of the break when one goes into the higher realms of devotional service. This is the point that is being alluded to here. So now, That point is advanced devotional service. Now there's two forms it can take. One is the attachment to the particular rules, that the rules itself give a form in which I am comfortable to express my affection for Krishna. And the other is I express my affection for Krishna, and that happens to be then shown through the rules. The same thing, just like on the material. You get it? It means there's a comparison here. I'm using my body for Krishna, right? And then I want to serve Krishna, I use my body. Okay? So that makes the difference between the beginning stages of devotional service and advanced devotional service. Then within the advanced, then you have two that have the same kind of reflection. I'm comfortable to serve Krishna. The rules I'm comfortable with, I engage the rules in Krishna service. The other is, I want to engage in Krishna service, therefore I use the rules. Did we catch that? So there's an overlap there. At the same time, it's the same principle. Does that make sense? So that's the difference in advanced devotional service between spontaneous and regulated. So in Vaikuntha, then they want to serve the Lord. They have that affection for the Lord, but it is based in it's grounded on expressing it through the rules. While in Braja, it's not. It's based on showing that affection for Krishna, but it happens to always work through the rules. Right? Because the rules are made on our, they're designed on the basis of spontaneous devotional service. Does that make some sense? Mother Yashoda, what she does for Krishna in her spontaneity becomes the rule of how anyone in the motherly relationship is supposed to deal with Krishna. Does that make sense? Because that is pure rasa. The pure parental rasa is that. Therefore, all mothers of the cosmic creation, it's based on that. That's how it functions. So, how Nanda Baba deals. So that's the prototype for all fathers. How Sudam, Sridam, Subal, Balaram, and the younger, those are the prototypes for all the various kinds of friendship relationships. How the gopis and Krishna deal. That's the prototype for all conjugal relationships. So there, it is pure rasa. There's no rasa abhas. Right? So rasa abhas means you're going against what's natural for that relationship. So because of the intensity of the pure love, these Rajabhasis never go against that rasa. Never break rasa. Because that pure spontaneous platform, it is the real rasa. And then others are modeled after that. So Mathura, Dwarka, Vaikuntha, the heavenly planets, the rules for our human beings, these are all modeled on that. But the purpose is different. So there is pure spontaneous love without any consideration of the body. While in Vaikuntha, there is consideration of the body. So then, but it's still, you're dealing with a transcendental body. So there's no harm. It's still transcendental. But in the material world, you're dealing with a material body. Therefore, then there's a difference there. But principle of iron and fire, then it's being able to be engaged. It becomes Krishna's, it becomes devotional service. Right? The body is material, but the process of devotional service is spiritual. The body becomes connected to that, it becomes spiritualized, as long as it's touching. You don't do service, it becomes disconnected, it becomes material again. Like that. But it becomes spiritualized. This is the wonderfulness of devotional service, is anything can be connected to devotional service through that process. So that's one aspect that's being given here. Another is that, taking it on this love for Krishna, so love is dynamic. Appreciation is the start, but when service starts, that's when you can say the love is real strong. Its foundation is very strong. The Shanta Bhaktas appreciate Krishna and his glories and his position and everything like that. But they don't render any service specifically. right? They appreciate, that's the rasa. But they're not specifically doing something for Krishna. But from dasi ras, then it starts. So that's why then many will say that dasi ras is actually the beginning of pure devotional service. Before that, it's just appreciation. And you have your life, Krishna has his, you appreciate his. And of anything appreciable, he's the most. So then he's put in the highest position of regard. But still, it's not, that step hasn't been taken to render service. So then the process becomes complete. You may have affection for Krishna. You may be attracted to Krishna, but you don't do anything for Krishna, really. So then, here, with these rasas, then something serious is being done. They are rendering service. They are engaging everything in his service. So that is then the platform of Vraja. Vraja then, this is the main focus, is on these higher. While in the other realms, Vaikuntha, Shanta Ras also has a very strong place. Though the prominence is still Dasya Ras. But in Vrindavan, then Dasya Ras, the environment may have this appreciation, but the actual dynamics are beginning with the servitorship. So now, then, in this, then, those who are rendering this service on that platform of prema, they are the devotees. And they are the expansions of the devotee. It means Mother Yashoda, here it says it. In the previous verse, it mentions Mother Yashoda naturally acts in such an exalted position in loving affairs. She is therefore a nitya-siddha devotee, an expansion of Krishna's Lalini potency, his potency to enjoy transcendental bliss through expansions who are special devotees. Such devotees are not sadhana-siddha. So they've always been there. So then what we can do is connect ourselves with those devotees. So the same way is the same principle, that the body is being connected to the devotional process, right? Means the soul wants to render service to Krishna. It connects the body to devotional service, so the body becomes spiritualized. So the same principle, then the jiva, who is marginal potency, wants to connect itself with the internal potency, the Hladini potency, through the devotional process. Then by connecting them, by serving those nitya-siddhas, then they become as good as Hladini potency. Though you can technically say they're different. But as far as practicality, there is no difference because of that connection that's been made. So one is in the fire of the Hladini potency. One is Hladini, just as in the material world, you take something material, put it in the fire of devotional service, it's as good as devotional service. So we see is that everything functions on this, whatever is working in one realm is working in the other. Its manifestation is different, but the principles all come from Vrindavan. Right? Everything that every rule and regulation is based on has come from Vrindavan. But there, it's in its natural form, so it's not a rule. It's naturally followed. Right? The mother naturally has affection for the child, right? But if she doesn't know, then someone has to tell her, oh, okay, so you deal like this with your child, you deal like that with your child, then you'll get, then that will be expression of motherly affection. Okay? Then by doing that practice, then one starts to experience that affection. Then it's not a matter of because of the rule you're doing it, it's because of the affection you're doing it. So one switches from one to the other. So the rules become a way to get there. So the residents of Braja don't have to get there. They are there. But for others, then, by following in their footsteps, then they can get there. So in the beginning, it means following the rules of why they do it. Then it will come to the point of that becomes changes into spontaneity. But the form will remain the same. Many times it's a mistake that spontaneous means no form. That's called impersonalism. Impersonalism means no form. Krishna has a form. He has a schedule. He has things he does. He has friends. He has relationships. And that's the way he likes it, because he's a person. So to just say, I'll do whatever I like when I like, that's impersonal. Because Krishna likes things done in a certain way. Right? It means Krishna likes his lunch served on top of the plate, not under the plate. Right? So if we decide today, well, everything we eat on top of the plate, why not today we do something different and put the prasad on the floor, then put the plate on top. Right? So that's impersonalism. So we have to be very, very careful to understand what is spontaneous. Right? The word is there for a purpose. It's connected for a purpose. It's connected to what those who are spontaneous do. Right? So they work within the boundaries of a relationship. But because the nature of love is unlimited, it's unlimited. The relationship is unlimited, though it functions within a particular sphere. Right? Mother Yashoda, you won't find her out dancing with Krishna down by the bank of Jamuna, or out wrestling with him, you know, or down on her hands and knees and mooing like a cow. You just won't find it. It's out of the realm of her rasa. But in the same way, within her rasa, it's unlimited how you can express the parental affection. So this is a mistake. It's the impersonal concept. Unlimited means no boundaries. So if I'm going to go into rasa, it means no boundaries. That means whatever I want to do, I can do. But that means whatever I want to do. It means I am the controller. I am God. That's where it's coming from. And why do I want to do that? Because it makes me happy. Because I am the enjoyer. And as I mature in this, then of course I'm very kind and friendly with everyone. I am the friend of everyone. Right? The Krishna's pointed out in Gita that unfortunately those three spots are already taken. He's the controller, he's the enjoyer, he's the friend of everyone. So, sorry, you know, better luck next time, right? You know, go for something else. Who can pop their eyeball out the farthest, you know, get the Guinness Book of World Records. You know, something else, maybe you can get farther ahead than that. But, you know, the position of controller, enjoyer, and friend of everybody has already been taken, you know, like that. So, but it's a good spot. I guess that's why everybody tries for it, probably. If it wasn't good, you probably wouldn't have every living to be trying for the spot. But, yeah. But unfortunately, fortunately, it's already taken, because you can imagine if one of us was actually the supreme controller, what a mess it would be, right? Yeah. Like that. So who knows what would happen. So, yeah. So we actually see as our real problems actually come down to is our impersonalism, not someone else's, right? Prabhupada pointed this out, is that one devotee wrote Prabhupada, you know, the devotees in the temple, they don't deal very nicely, they do whatever they want to do, they don't consider other people, you know, they're very impersonal. It's a very impersonal environment. Prabhupada wrote back, no, it's actually the opposite, it's very personal. The reason that they're doing things the way they want to do it is because they're persons. Right? If they were impersonal, then, you know, it's like moving through air. You know, it's like, you know, what's going to be the obstacle? Because they're persons. The problem is they, as persons, haven't figured out you're a person. Right? So they don't have relationships. That you can say. But personalism, you can't get away from. Right? The impersonalist wants to get to the Brahman because he's a person. And he's tired of, as a person, being harassed by the material energy. He wants out of it. So everything's still personal. The main thing is this relationship. To establish a relationship means you have to establish Krishna as the center of it. Then everything else will go around it. Right? Prabhupada says, you drop one rock, it goes in the center. Everything else comes around. So when Krishna, when you found Krishna is the center of the relationship, then you'll actually find the relationship you're looking for. Right? In its proper place. You want a relationship with anybody. When you found Krishna as the center of it, then it actually works. Before that, then we're the center, and the child thinks they're the center, the friend thinks they're the center, and the husband or wife thinks they're the center, and then there's clash. Right? Then there's clash. But the point is, if Krishna's the center, then there's no clash. There's no clash. So that's the thing. Then the next step is okay, Krishna's the center, but now, how do I identify within this set of rings, right? It means there is the first ring, right? And then there's the ring all the way on the other side of the pond, right? Now I want to be the first ring, right? But also there is here. The Nityasiddhas are already there. So those first rings are already taken. But we find is this perfect harmony in being a farther out ring. The farther out rings are bigger. Why? Because they taste everything that everything within that ring is. Right? Krishna is the first thought. The first ring around it tastes Krishna. The second ring around it tastes the first ring and Krishna. Third ring tastes the second, the first, and the third. So the farther out it is, the more it tastes. Right? These things are science, right? So many other examples could have been picked. This is picked because it fits. It fits the process. So then we don't have to try to be the control. To get in the center, you have to control your way in. Right? And why? Because you want to enjoy it. No, but if that positions are already taken, then we take up our natural position as serving of these persons. Then what they are tasting, we will taste. Right? Mother Yashoda is Kladini potency. So she's pretty big. We're jivas. We're pretty small. We're finite. So that means our capacity on our own to taste Krishna's unlimited pleasure potency is not that big. Right? Mother Yashoda's is. So by that principle of iron and fire, then it becomes fire. By us connecting to her or to any of the Vrajavasis, then what they can taste, we can taste. Otherwise, if we muscle our way up to the front, then still how much taste we'll get at the back or at the front, it's not going to make any difference because we have our amount that we can taste. They're unlimited. We connect with the unlimited. We taste unlimited. So these are points that are being made here, is that their position is very, very special. And so then if we can appreciate that and then try to follow in their footsteps of the Vrajavasis, then things become very, very special. It's a very special environment. And then the uniqueness of that environment can be appreciated. Yeah. Any questions or comments? Yes?
So these are prototypes that need to see the theories that you were explaining. Are they all Shakti Tantra or are they any Jiva Tantra models?
Is the prototypes, are they all are they Shakti or Jiva? Specifically, they're Shakti. They're Ladini potency. But their closest associates, then those are Jivas. So we follow those Jivas, like Rupa Goswami. Radharani and her gopis, they're all Shakti Tattva. Rupa Goswami is Jiva, but he's the first. So we follow those who are following him. That is our connection. Like that. You know, so you always have that one devotee who's that connection. So that's what, because that's what we can do. We can't do what they can. We can't do what Radharani or the gopis can do. We can't do what Mother Yashoda can do. But we can do what the jivas that follow them do. Right? Because the point is to please Krishna. And for Krishna, the whole cosmic creation is part of his pleasure. So if one fits in whatever place it is perfection. We are perfect. Our pleasure we can give Krishna is perfect. What we can taste is perfect. So everything becomes very nice. We never have to worry that it's second rate. But if we know who we are, we know where we fit in. It means we are Jiva Tattva. We have a place like that. And so then we're always there. Lakshmi is always on the Lord's chest as Srivas. But the Kostubha gem, that is the basically the conglomerate of Jivas. So they are also dear. So the Shakti Tattva and the Jiva Chatta is always on the Lord's chest. Does that make sense? So we have the place, but the Jiva Tattva then adds to the Shakti Tattva already is giving unlimited pleasure. So this is the amazement of it, is that it's already unlimited, and then by adding the Jivas to that, you can increase it. Right? This is the speciality of the spiritual potencies. It can always be increased, even though it's unlimited. So then that adds the niceness to the existing rasa. So if we understand that, we know our place and we know how we fit in. Then all these impersonal ideas and that come up, because to think I am the devotee is also impersonal. I am God, that's impersonal. And I am the devotee is impersonal. So that's why when we say there's a razor's edge and one side you have the Mayavadis, the other side the Sahajiyas, there's no real difference between them. Right? The Mayavadis think I'm God, the Sahajiyas think I'm the devotee. But it's the same in person. Because Krishna hasn't become the center. They think Krishna is the center, but it's not. It's their own pleasure is the center. They're thinking of the Astakali Lila for their own purposes. Right? They're not doing it to please Krishna. They're doing it to please themselves. So it's different. You know, just as the karmi and the devotee, the activities look the same. So it may be that those posing as advanced devotees and the advanced devotees, it looks the same. But they're different. What the karmi cooking for themselves and the devotee cooking for the Lord is this like vast difference. In the same way as those who pose themselves as devotees and those who are devotees, it's also a vast difference. Or they look similar. So one has to know the sciences so one's not bewildered. And there's always an overlap. That's the point, is that the one, it's like the mere image, there is a point where it joins. Otherwise it can't be a mere image. Right? Try it. Look in a mirror. You know, you're standing here, you're standing there. Go over to the side and try to see where it is. You'll see what's just on this side of the mirror is just on that side. Right? They have to meet, otherwise they're not connected. So there's always an overlap of these principles. Is that the one here, then this top part becomes the bottom of this one. That's why it's a sundi. It's partly this, partly that. It's not this, it's not that. Right? The twilight, it's not day, it's not night. But it has light from night, but it has darkness from day. But it has light, so you can't call it night. And it has darkness, you can't call it day. Right? So it has both. So that's the point, generally we get bewildered. But they both happen at once. That's a chinta veda veda tattva. Simultaneously, you have night, day, and night and day. Right? Generally, we think there's night, there's day. But actually, there's night, there's day, and there's night and day simultaneously. So all these are going on at once. So that's the thing, is that achinta veda veda tattva means that you have these contradictions happening at the same time. But they're perfectly harmonized because Krishna is the center. If you have a problem, can't work it out, put Krishna as the center, the problem will go away. If it's actually a problem, then Krishna is not the center again. Does that make sense? The obstacle comes because Krishna is not the center. Does that make sense? So that principle works on everything. And so then the topmost platform is where it's spontaneously happening. You don't have to think about it. Does that make sense? And the beginning stages are where you have to think about it. And by thinking about analyzing it, thinking about it, contemplating it, then you can create the activity. That creativity creates the habit. The habit gives rise to spontaneity. So we see that happens in all spheres of anything. So that's the point. As you catch that, the eternal principles are what makes everything work here. And what makes things work here are founded in the eternal principles. So that's the thing, is we bridge that gap. Others don't. That's the difference. Is that we can tell where this has come from. So we know how to get past the middle stage. That otherwise, one gets stuck in the middle. That's what Prabhupada makes the point, is the Shanta Rasa is not enough. You've gotten yourself out of the material world, you've situated yourself in devotional service, it's not enough because you haven't actually reached the other side. The other side starts with Dasya Ras. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So these are very deep things. Some will say Prabhupada hasn't given. But I would say is those who say that don't actually know what Prabhupada's given. It's what he's saying, somehow or another, they're not used to. They're used to words, semantics. If it says Baba, that's advanced. If it says, you know, do that one should, then that is Vaidhi. And so it's semantics. But this is going beyond semantics. Philosophy uses language, but it's not language. Right? That means to express devotional service, language has been created. To express rasa, language has been created. But language is not rasa. Right? So, therefore, we can see is these principles, these are the topmost. You can keep going with these same principles into the finest points of the most advanced platforms of devotional service that Lord Chaitanya himself came to taste. Otherwise, why is he a preacher of Bhagavatam? Why is he a liver of Bhagavatam? How does he taste the topmost platforms of the love of Srimati Radharani through Bhagavatam? Right? And so, here is points of Bhagavatam. And they're going to be given. But we may just see, okay, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lakshmi can't, don't have that mercy, therefore the Brajvasis are higher. Okay, I got that. Right? Been there, done that. Okay, next point. Now we want something higher. No, this principle goes all the way into the most, topmost taste of the relationship between Radha and Krishna, which are beyond what anyone else can even deal with. It's outside the sphere of what other living entities, other expansions of the Hladini potency, anyone cannot even enter into. Right? What Radha and Krishna taste, no one can enter into on the topmost platforms. They down a little bit, they share that. But beyond that, they can't because they're complete. Krishna is the complete energetic. Radharani is the complete energy. No one else can taste that completeness anyway. We can taste how much we are. And for us, because that's what we are, it's full. It's beyond full. So we don't have to worry it's less. But they are unique in that they are beyond. So those principles start there. So if one knows the science, then according to one's qualifications, one can take it as far in as is one's position. Therefore, to say that Prabhupada only gave the basics is said by those who haven't really studied what is said here. And unless they get the particular Sanskrit terms and this and particular wordings, they don't figure that it's that. You know? It's just like, okay, I go to the classroom where the physics, nuclear physics professor is writing huge numbers and letters on the board. It takes up the whole board with one equation. Then I think, this is math.
right? This is the taste of math. I'm a mathematician. I understand that this is nectar. But the guy who the professor got the principles from, who's writing it on the board, was sitting out in the park watching a bunch of pigeons eat grains. Does that make sense? It means that the guy that dreamt up that equation, that was from watching a bunch of pigeons eating grains. And from that, they got the unified principle. Then it comes out that big. That's the difference. Prabhupada is the one sitting out in the park watching the pigeons. And these others are the ones sitting in the classroom with the, you know, PhD emeritus guy writing these monstrous numbers and going, yes, this is math, and anything below this is... That's the difference. So those who are on that platform don't have to prove themselves. Right? They're automatically recognized. And these others, they have to prove themselves. They have to say, I'm a mathematician. Right? Does that make sense? Einstein didn't have to say, I'm a mathematician. Is that okay? Yes.
Only a second question. Before this term that Srila Prabhupada was mentioning about devotional service beginning after Dasya or after Shanti Ras. Now, yesterday we were discussing devotees in different rasas. And so in Shanti Ras, we have the two examples. One was Sukadeva Goswami, the other was Dwarf Mara. Now, Sukadeva Goswami, he's speaking Bhagavatam. Can we, you know, based on that term, say that he's not performing devotional service?
No, it means here it said pure devotional service, then where is that? That's it. Although they may sometimes be called Shanta Bhaktas, real bhakti begins with Dasya Ras. It means this bhakti is devotional service. But here, see, is you have to take it that your definitions have to come from somewhere. Right? It means if you're going to make a decision in life, you have to have something to compare it to. Right? You want to make a decision, your mind always has to compare it to something. Right? You want to look at this wall and decide what color it is. You have to compare it to what its previous experiences is. And then you can say what color it is. Or if it's good or not. You know, if all you've seen is worse walls than this, then you'll look at this and go, hey, this is pretty good. But if you've seen better walls than this, and you look at this and go, it needs a little work. So there always is a point of a standard. So this is a big, big principle. Is who sets the standard that you judge what you want from. Right? And then why are we deciding on the wall? Okay, the wall as it is now is good enough. The wall's there and it exists and it does the purpose of a wall. Now if you're talking aesthetics, then it's not up to the standard. But if you're just talking it, doing it, you know, being its, exerting its wallness, you know, on the rule. So it's doing it. But if you want it to add to the ambience, you know, unless, you know, you're into funk or something, then that one may have something, a different idea. Does that make sense? So a standard is actually the most essential thing. And depending upon what your standard is, actually sets you who you are. So if you use the Karmis, modern vox populi, social customs as the standard, then it makes you a pious person. You know, that's actually, because then one will gauge everything that you in devotional service according to that. So actually, even though one's intent is to be a devotee, the values system and standards you've picked actually take you out of devotional service. And your application based on that will never give you satisfactory devotional results. Does that make some sense? So the picking of who sets your standard is the most essential thing in life. Prabhupada says the most essential thing you can get from the guru is the mood. That's your standard. So this is the standard of Braj. So on the Braj standard, anything below Dasya Ras is not dynamic. Right? But any of those Braj Basis can appreciate anyone on any of the platforms below. They can appreciate the love of Hanuman or Garuda or the Vaikuntha Vasis or of the four Kumaras. They appreciate it. But within the realm of the dynamics of Braja Bhakti, it's not enough. Does that make sense? So we're moving the standard to there. Therefore, we'll compare everything to that. So as Braja Basis, we can say that. If we're taking devotional service and material life, then it's looked at on the other side. Because anyone who then makes the Lord the center of their life, that is favorable. So therefore, we have great examples like the four Kumaras, Narad Muni, this one, that one. Right? It's just a matter of where you're sitting and for what purpose. But as soon as that purpose is achieved, you can't apply it as a higher principle. That's a mistake. Otherwise, that's what makes the particular sampradayas and the particular... Why is a yogi a yogi? Because he has a set of standards. Everything is compared to. Why is interpersonalism impersonal? Everything. Otherwise, they say nishkam karma yoga gets you out of the material world. We say the same thing. Right? But they put impersonalism in the center while we put Krishna in the center. So we will say many of the things they say, but we say beyond. Because we have a particular standard that we're working by. Does that make sense? So your values have to be based on a system, on a standard. So that we take from our acharyas. So that right there itself is showing something. That right there shows that what is being given is Braja Bhakti. But it shows that the person speaking these purports does not have attachment for particular Sanskrit terms. You know what I'm saying? Someone who's new, then it's the externals that makes them who they are. Right? I've never, let's say, been on a pair of skis in my life. But I've looked at all the books, I've gotten that, I have the money, I bought all the best equipment. Right? Whatever I see all the top guys wearing, and I've looked in all the pictures and seen the colors and this, I picked out. So when I go to the ski resort, I look like a professional. But that's it. Right? The top guy may be dressed like that, may not be. You know what I'm saying? So what we generally see is that those who are that big, they enjoy just going out and mingling amongst the public and being thought as normal. They'll say, I had a great day today. I went down to the mall and I bought this and that and no one recognized me. That would be a great ecstasy for a celebrity. But a wannabe who wants to go out and, oh, these people, it's such a botheration, and, you know, tell the bodyguards to keep them back and, oh, what a headache. No, they're enjoying every second of it. So that's the difference there. So we have these standards. And these standards are just natural. They're not forced. They don't have to be put on. It's not a language. We have our language. Okay, they've chosen the term Raghunuga Bhakti. Okay, so that's a word. Spontaneous devotional service means the same thing. But Raghunuga Bhakti carries a flavor, right? A language flavor and a thing of, I know Raghunuga, what's Raghunuga Bhakti? Never heard of it, right? Spontaneous devotional service, I've heard of spontaneous, I've heard of devotional, you know, I've heard of these words, so I could maybe put it together. But that's common, anybody can understand it. Raghunuga Bhakti, like, who can understand? It makes one feel special. So one has to be very, very careful that one, by getting the trappings, one thinks one is that. Or if one is that, therefore the trappings are the natural thing that you need. You want to ski, naturally a pair of skis works really good. Right? And you can't just use your flip-flops to stick in your skis. You need a ski boot. So they want to ski, they need these things. Right? So they can ski, they have the stuff. The other one wants to ski, they have to get this. You know what I'm saying? They're coming in from the other side. So that's the difference between the advanced levels and the junior levels. Is that which where it's, is it descending or is it ascending? Right? So any devotional service is descending, but our mentality still may be ascending. So when we give up that ascending mentality, which is based on the impurities of karmic life, because karmis, the karmis, jnanis, yogis, that's all ascending processes. Their consciousness is to ascend. But the devotee is the devotional service descends, the mercy descends. They don't say, she's such an advanced devotee, she's beyond everybody, she's... No. What is the term used? That mercy has not been gained by anyone. So mercy descends. So we can see from there the process is being mentioned. We'll take it, oh, we got to get there. No, that place descends to you. So it's a whole different concept. So this is the thing, is we're always trying, but because we're trying to ascend for Krishna, it's devotional service and it's glorious. And if we stick at it and don't get attached to the positions and the externals that are created by that ascending process, then when we get to the point where we can let go of that and then work on the descending, it'll happen. But if we remain attached to it, then it's a problem. We are attached to, I'm a great devotee, I'm a leader, I'm this, I'm that. Then it'll be a problem for us. But if we're just an instrument for the Lord's, you know, then we'll be able to, it'll naturally just switch. So it'll be pure descending. Otherwise, we're functioning, we're trying to go upstream. The stream naturally flows down. Does that make some sense? Yes. Oh, sorry. Another question.
Prabhupada explains in one book that one's success in Krishna consciousness doesn't just depend on the clinical chanting, but also on one's efforts.
On one's efforts. Okay. Yeah, Prabhupada's saying that, he's saying, Prabhupada says, it's not just mechanical chanting that is the success, but our effort. Because the effort is the desire. Means that you are chanting has shown that you have the desire to take up the process of devotional service. But why should our desire to take up the devotional process be in the past tense? Right? It should be alive. It should be dynamic. So we want to develop that love now. You know, we want to become included in the devotional process now. Right? Therefore, effort is made. That is the difference. If we're just mechanical chanting, then we're not actually involved. The modes of nature are taking care of, right? It means we don't know how does habit work. We're not doing it. The modes of nature are doing it. So the modes of nature are chanting. So she's getting having a good time tonight. But if we want benefit for it, we have to connect with it. Otherwise, she's always chanting in that, because so she doesn't mind if this one there chants. Like that. You know, that's because she's chanting. So if you chant mechanically, it's not a problem, because the modes of nature are doing that anyway. Right? But now if you want to advance and get out of it, then you have to change from thinking of this to focusing on the name. Does that make sense? Then it becomes dynamic. That's why Shantaras is said to be not as good as Dasya, because it's not dynamic. Though, in this case, it's pure. Just the principle of the one, and then you go to the next, it's the same principle, and it takes you to the next, right?
Use the example of a submarine going to close depth, and it seems that the living entity is either developing consciousness or degressing in consciousness. Use the term ascending and descending. Uh-huh. Is it a proper vision to see that actually both subjects are in a focus of progression, but one's more of a detour? In other words, the material world is gradually bringing in entities to come to that platform at some time.
Yeah, yeah. maybe he's here. Maybe he said, Mara's question is that I was making the point of ascending, descending. So in consciousness that we may have, the point is that we're either advancing or we're, you know, digressing. So then would it be seen as the balance is that they're both actually connected, but one's dynamic and one is indirect. Means one can say the material existence is a progression, but that's Krishna's plan. But the living entity has to be very, very careful that they don't think because they're in the material world that it's a step up. Because this mistake can be made. That's one of the very important foundations of very strongly being attached to that I the soul came from Brahman, meaning the Brahma Jyoti, where there's nothing, and has come to the material world. Because then actually, no one should get on my case too much, because it's a step up. I'm moving forward. I'm progressing. Rather than understanding that Brahman has a bigger definition than the Brahma Jyoti. The material energy is also Brahman. The jiva is Brahman. The internal potency is Brahman. Krishna is Brahman. Because it's Krishna. Krishna is Brahman. Everything coming from Krishna is Brahman. It's all Brahman. So if I just say, we're coming from Brahman, then it stops the conversation, because we just said, basically, we're coming from Krishna. Right? But those who are attached to that principle as a foundational point, then it's because then I'm actually doing okay. Even if I'm a little materialistic, this, that, it's better than being situated in Brahma Jyoti. Like that. So the process is there. The material energy is for the reformation of the living entity, but the living entity only gets credit for taking part in it when he actually becomes conscious of it. Otherwise, Maya is her devotional service. Right? But it only becomes ours when we become conscious of it. Otherwise, as I said before, it's her devotional service. Right? Like that. So when we become conscious, then that's good. Another aspect here, descending, meaning the Lord's mercy descends. He comes down. Means he comes down as the deity. He comes down as the Bhagavatam. He comes down as the devotional process. He comes as the holy name. He comes as the rules and regulations of devotional life. He comes like this. Is that? So he's come down, and from that we can catch here and then go up. Right? But we've been caught in the descending process. While the impersonalists and the others, they think by my endeavor I'm getting up. Because I have the desire, my endeavor, my intelligence, my facilities, my everything, I am getting advanced. But the devotee knows that everything's Krishna's. So I'm only an instrument, even in my own body, my own mind, my own intelligence, my own that. Now it's a matter, according to my desire, whether I want to follow that for Krishna. How Krishna has descended in his natural form, because Krishna can descend also as Kali and Kali Bhairava and all kinds of funky, nasty things. Like that. Means whatever form is going on, there is a material prototype of that. Right? You see sleazy women on the street, there is a prototype of that in the expansion of Maya. Right? Otherwise, why is it they fit into that? You want to be sleazy, they all look the same sleazy. You know, the guy is supposed to be the big stud. They all look like the same stud. They all do the same thing. There's no difference. Right? It's because there's a prototype of that in the material world, an expansion of Shiva and Parvati. But they're reflected of what's the original of Radha and Krishna. So that dissension then comes down to this, and instead of it being the Mahamaya, it descends to Yogamaya, and it'll come down to wherever we are. And from that point, we can catch that and then be lifted out. But the dynamic point is the desire. And from that desire to engage ourselves according to our ability, that becomes the special. And so descending here doesn't mean that we're going down, and ascending means we're going up. This means descending means the mercy is coming down
or we're not taking advantage of the mercy and we're trying to use our own energy to get up. That was that context. So, I guess last point.
Maharaj, Krishna, he has unlimited energies, Shakti. He can enjoy very nicely and very wonderfully with them. And they are innumerable. So why the need for the jiva, which can fall down into the material world and create so much difficulty for itself, struggle, this and that, and go through so much trial and tribulation, and eventually maybe get back to the Supreme Lord and join with the other Nitya Siddhas who are already serving Krishna very nicely. It seems like, you know, you were an early model that didn't work very well, so why not scrap them all and just stay with the Shaktis? And no problem, no material world, no modes of nature, none of this. Everything goes on nicely and there's no disturbance anywhere.
Yeah, he's not in charge.
Approach it from a few angles. Just like, let's say, we sit down and eat something we like. It's nice. But now if we sit down and eat the same thing with a group of close friends, it's nicer. Now, can you imagine that you can... Now, generally, we find this world, it's very hard even to find one intimate friend, let alone a few. So, could you imagine that you could expand that out to hundreds of thousands, that same intimacy? You know, you could have your intimate, you know, little party with 1,000 people, and it would still have that flavor of intimacy. It would have so much more energy and so much more variety. So that's the
Krishna does that with his energies anyway.
No, but it's still, it's different. No, but still, it's different. It's a different flavor. It's just like, let's take another thing. You take a guitar, right? It has 6 strings. And it's nice, right? The one string is quite capable of making the sound. Now, then you have a 12-string guitar. There's 2 strings that play the same note. It has more richness and more depth than the 6-string. But they're the same. And you pluck both of them. So therefore, there's Radharani and her gopis expansion. Now you take a sitar, it has sympathetic strings. They're never plucked. And they kind of come in afterwards. That creates another dimension that you don't get in either of the other two situations. So it creates a fullness that is not there because they resonate afterwards. So you perform something here, and then you perform it here. That gap is filled with the resonance. So then it's always tasteful. So it's a different flavor. So that combination of flavors means, like, just like with salt, you can get everything done. You add in some pepper, you add in some other spices, you add in different things. And you can put so many more and it adds more and more to the subtleties of the flavors.
Why can't Krishna do it with energies that aren't prone to fall down into illusion?
Why work with the, how you say?
Why create this potentially faulty energy when you can do everything with perfect energy? Yeah.
So Prabhupada explains why the jiva, what is the speciality of that? It's because of the point of they could choose to not serve. So that gives a special flavor in that one has chosen to serve. The internal potency by nature always will serve. But the jiva could or not, so that they've chosen to, that adds also a flavor. So it's a different kind of flavor.
Then how can Radharani be complete?
Because she includes everybody.
Does she have the choice of not serving?
No, because the choice is not the sign of completeness. Her sign of completeness is whatever mood Krishna has, she has a compatible mood to relate with it. Like that.
that, because just the nature she wouldn't. You know? Just like, so, but here has been created something else that does have a different flavor, so it gives it different flavors. Like another, okay, you have the meal, and then you have some side dish. Side dish is something completely, you don't need it for the meal, but it adds to the whole thing, because it has its own uniqueness. So that's all. We're a, you know, how do you say?
A side dish.
Yeah, we're a side dish. But it adds to the whole thing. But it's part of the program that there is all these things. Right?
Down here,
where
it's like
it's
trying to be a main meal.
Yeah, that's fine. Down here in the material world, with side dishes trying to be the main meal. Yeah, that's the problem. So that's the thing. Plus, if we look at it, Prabhupada says only 1/10 of the jivas make the choice to come here. 9/10 never come. So, you know, it's a success rate is quite good. Plus, every jiva in the material world will go back to Godhead at one point. And in Krishna's time, it's not a long time. You know, we're talking about moments like that. For us, it seems very big, you know. But for Krishna, the whole material creation is 3/4 of a second. It's not even, it's just the time to breathe out, breathe back in. So, you know, therefore, it's not that much time. Though, because of Krishna's affection for us, it does feel like a long time to him. So that's why he makes the endeavor to come and all this. But in actuality, then we see that it's kind of like, you know, everybody wondered what happened to you and now you showed up again. You know, we see that in Gopa Kumar. They show up and, oh, hey, here he is. Like that. So it's just like, you know, if you went to powder your nose and somehow another got lost, you know.
And mathematically, eventually there will be no more material world.
Well, see, yeah, mathematically there will in the future be no material world. That's because we're working on the finite principle of time and space. But here is, these are areas that we're given, we're told about the unlimitedness and the eternalness of things, simply to get us out of the idea that the material world is eternal and a place to enjoy. But otherwise, the concept of eternality and no time, no space, we can't intellectually accommodate. It's a different thing. Like, you can't intellectualize affection. You know? It means if you want to break it, you can intellectualize. But to taste it, intelligence doesn't have any entrance. So, these things are being given to break our attachment to the material world. But as soon as it's been broken, then we work on the taste of the dynamic devotional service. Because it means Krishna's unlimited. So that means he's unlimitedly expanding. So the Vaikunthas are expanding, the jivas, everything's expanding. But at the same time, they always were there. So these kind of things are beyond, you know, how you say, our binary brain here.
Expand would suggest there's room for it to expand.
Yeah, but there's no space. So that's the whole point, is that at that point it kind of like loses. So Krishna can understand. Mother Yashoda couldn't understand it. So when she looks into Krishna's mouth, it means Arjuna sees it, he freaks. Mother Yashoda just looks and just goes, what's going on here? You know? Like that. So it's not understandable. It's just something that Krishna knows, but it's not for him very important. That's why he says he doesn't take a step out of Vrindavan. Because in that place, it's only affection, it's only pure rasa. Well, anywhere else, there is the consideration, he is God, he's unlimited, he's the source of everything. And that, though, in Dwarka and Ayodhya, then the rasa is prominent. While in Vaikuntha, then that aspect of him being God is more prominent. But in Braj, no one even considers this. Like, you know, okay, big deal, so what? Okay, it's time for lunch. You know, so would God like to come over here and take lunch? You know, it's like that. You know, we've been waiting here, we're hungry, you know, sort of that. Yeah, so it's like big deal. You know, it's like you have a group of very intimate friends, one of them becomes a big muck-up.
The others may use it as a joke, but otherwise it doesn't matter to them. So what? He's a big guy, you know. He's the mayor. So what? You know. It's like I can still be in film restaurant, you know. It's like it doesn't matter, you know. I can still eat more pizza than you, you know. It's like it doesn't matter. So that kind of thing is they don't care. Even if they know, that's why sometimes it comes up. It's always thrown out, you know. But that's the pleasure. Is even though it's thrown out, they don't take it. Other realms, its mouth is shut. In Vaikuntha, they don't hear about other realms. Right? It just don't know. Like when Gopa Kumara is sitting there and offering praises to Krishna as Vaikunthapati, then some of the senior people kind of take him to the side and say, we don't do those things around here. You know, it's like, you know, here we know, stand, folded hands, you know, my dear Lord, you know, you're the supreme, you know, this and that. And then some of them say, no, it's you know, it's natural, it's kind of loving and all that, because they all see also Vrindavan as Vaikuntha. It's just a very sweet form of Vaikuntha. So don't, you know, give them a break like this. Then they all, Narad Muni gets rid of all of them, says, we don't talk about that stuff here. Like that. They don't know about Goloka. Like that. You know? But Krishna knows. Vaikunthapati, he's a devotee of Krishna. And Braj. Like that. All the Vishnumurtis are devotees of Krishna. So they know. And Lakshmi, she wants to be, because she's the consort of him, then he can only enter by thinking. So she can only enter by thinking. She can't go directly. That's why she doesn't make it into Braj. Like that. I've heard that she gets a job washing pots in Mother Yashoda's kitchen. That's as close as she gets. So it's a different consideration. But in Vrindavan, they know all the other realms and what they do and everything in their life, but it doesn't disturb there. So that gives Krishna more pleasure. If there's one thing is okay, you have your son and he's well guarded and all that, he's very nice and he's good. One's very happy. But one is always worried, okay, if he goes on bad association. Now let's say after some time he's more mature and he can go out in the world, and in that bad association he can convert those people into what he's doing and not be the, then that takes on a whole different flavor. So that's the Braj Basi. So even now and again someone goes, hey, I think this kid's special, you know, maybe he's a demigod, maybe he's Narayan, maybe like that, and everyone goes, oh yeah, well maybe, you know, I've got time for lunch. Like that. So they just it just kind of like, yeah, okay, maybe. That's about it, and he's gone. So they're always fixed. So that pleases Krishna, you know, like that. It's like Arjuna saw the universal form. He dropped out of his rasa, of friendship. He just goes, you're God, and I'm sitting there on the bed with you, and I'm joking that you're a Yadava. Because the moon dynasty, by definition, serves the sun dynasty. The kings of the moon dynasty are automatically vassals of the kings of the sun dynasty. So therefore, the Kurus are sun dynasty, that's Arjuna, and Krishna is Yadu, he's moon dynasty. So automatically he's subservient to Arjuna. So when he always is calling Krishna Yadava, it's just for that fun. That, you know, I'm the superior, you know, because, you know, friends is always that chivalry, you know. So I'm the superior, you know. And Krishna likes that. So there's always that kind of thing. So then when he showed the universal form, he just goes, oh my God, you know, here is God, you know. And so he just drops straight out of his rasa, you know, and all he starts offering all these prayers and this and that and like that. And so Krishna could see he's freaking out too much, and then, you know, showed his forearm form and then went back to his regular form. And then again his rasa came back in. But Mother Yashoda, this is my son. What's all these planets and universes in his mouth? It just doesn't make any sense, you know. You know, it's like that. I mean, I didn't know what's a Mattel made something like that. They didn't. I just couldn't catch it. So, just watching that bemilderment for a few moments, then Krishna then removed it, and then everything. As soon as it was gone, and immediately just went back. And you know, just thinking, man, what did I eat for breakfast? So it's just another concept. Rasa is in another category. The tattva is used to get there.
but the tattva is burnt up at the shanta platform. At the marginal platform, that is where it's burnt up. Then that's your choice. You want to move in the realm of rasa, or move in the realm of material rasa and the tattva that's here. So that's why it said pure devotional service really is on the other side, when you've made that step and committed yourself to a working relationship. That's when it gets dynamic, you know. Otherwise, just appreciating isn't so serious. You know, it seems to be nice, but it's another realm, you know. So that's the thing. But we're used to this Santa Ras action. Like the boy and the girl are together, right? That's actually Shanta Ras. It's not actual conjugal Ras, because they're just appreciating each other. When they get married, that's conjugal rasa. But if they don't know rasa, it doesn't operate. But the other, you only have to appreciate some quality, you know, like that. You like the perfume, you like this. It doesn't take much, you know. But the other one, then you have to know what is rasa, how to interact, how to deal. And if you know that, then it's on a platform higher. Yeah. If it's not known, then it doesn't seem. So that's the whole thing, is that then there's commitment to activity. Like that, on a commitment side. The other is not really commitment. You know, you like it, you're doing it. That commitment, it's the other person likes it, you're doing it. Like that. Does that make some sense? So enter Rataraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki, Prabhupada Ki. Some of the top of the menu.